Hello, everyone. That no fluff title reminds me of Barb's sharing and one of the things that she spoke to in the readings from Eva Bell Werber was the idea of no idle words. No idle words. Hello, Karen Worth. My Mooresville friend is in the room. Happy to see her. I enjoyed your meditation this morning, Karen. God's peace and joy are in that heart that seems to be bundled up, and we can unbundle our heart instead. We can change our minds for sure. Yeah, no idle words, Barb. Same as no fluff. No stories, no add-ons. I was listening to, gosh, I don't know, it Nisargadatta, Muji, Ramana Maharshi, and Nirmala, Regina, Michael Langford. So many things I am listening to, reading, and looking at. And so sometimes I can clearly be mistaken about who it was that said what. But it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter who said what. It's really how it sits in my heart. That's what's most important. And yeah. We talked today a little bit about Reverend Carrie Christensen spoke about she had been planning to move prior to her hospital visit. And that while she was in the hospital, it was a seamless moving that took place. And I know Ken and Rebecca have been moving, and sometimes it doesn't seem seamless. Then, for instance, my daughter and son-in-law moved yesterday, and it was a seamless move on the day of the move. And so being open-minded to what shows up, to what shows up, where there may be the expectation that, the contract said three men were supposed to show up for the move and two men show up instead. And so you notice the heart constrict right away that it is not what I want it to be. And there's that non-acceptance of what is, and in inserting right away at the beginning of the move what I think it should be. But obviously it is not that. And so then there becomes the choice, is this where I will stay, or will I be open to everything working perfectly with two movers instead of three? And so it went seamlessly. And so, yes, God's peace and joy are mine. I don't have to bundle my heart up as if that is my safety, as Karen spoke to this morning, and that noticing of that constriction and understanding that her freedom it is not on this placing that bundled up heart on the altar and giving that as if that is the gift that I would offer to myself as well as to my brothers and sisters. And so that's not what we're asked to do today with our lesson. That's not what Reverend Carrie Christensen Reverend Carrie Christensen shared with us. In her sharing, she was open to everything. Everything. And when she noticed constriction, she was open to the constriction. We've been asked to look at the loving all method of meditation in our gentle healing class. And for me, the essence of it is living from divine self as love, which is what divine self is. It is that love that accepts everything as it is. So, you know, accepting, loving the sick body and loving the absence of the sick body. Loving the suffering and loving the absence of the suffering. Loving the peace and loving the absence of the peace. Loving the turmoil and loving the absence of the turmoil. And the thing that I noticed most about the loving all method was that the love was the only consistent. That is the what I'm going to call the quiet instruction. Be the love, you know, be that love that accepts all things. So yeah, it was sweet how, and of course Barb sharing from, oh, and Muji, listening to Muji this morning, I appreciated Ken playing our Muji meditation that we were to listen to with gentle healing, as I had not listened to that yet. It's been a busy few days with the moving, so. I was trying to be helpful, and sometimes in the busyness of activity, the loving all method is the easiest way to engage with divine self. That is, you know, what I'm giving to myself as well as what I'm sharing with those I seem to be helping. So lots of interconnectedness in everybody's sharing this morning, and I feel grateful for each gift that came in the form of all my brothers and sisters so far this morning. It's been quite beautiful, and I appreciate everybody giving of their gifts and sharing from their heart. So if I haven't said thank you before or that I'm grateful to you, I'm saying it now. Thank you. So with that being said, I will go right into sharing from the book that I am sharing from, and that book is called Experience Your Perfect Soul. And it is a joyful path to self-realization, and it is a book of powerful quotes, and those quotes, we are at the beginning. We are going to be beginning on page 7. This is a book of Michael Langford's in which he selected direct path quotes from 7 different what he calls Christian mystics, and he selected from their work, from their books, direct path quotes. And so we are now reading from chapter 1, which is the Christian mystic William Samuel. And the following quotes by William Samuel are from the book, A Guide to Awareness and Tranquility. And we are on page 7. And we ended last week with William Samuel sharing that reality or transcendent identity is something that he has found. And that finding he expresses as, I am it. I am it. It is I. It is I. And I'll go on a mid-page if you're wanting to read along on page 7. The heart doesn't speak of misery. It tells of perfection. And Karen spoke to the bound heart, you know, how she has bound her heart in the mistaken belief that that is where her safety lies. Yet, if we examine our experience and find that there is any misery of any sort in that experience, that tells us that we are believing a thought that is not true. And we therefore bind our heart, which is our true wisdom, our truth, our safety, our freedom. We are binding it with a false thought, a belief in a false thought. So it's saying the heart doesn't speak of misery. It tells of perfection. And that perfection is in italics. Oh, and speaking of italics, I just wanted to let all of you know that last week I had been wondering if, in fact, the italicized words in this book were, in fact, practice instructions like the italicized words in the purpose of practice and effort. And I'm here to tell you that Michael Langford did, in fact, reply to that and let me know that the italicized words in this particular book, Experience Your Perfect Soul, are not practice instructions. The italicized words are simply the italicized words that occurred in each of these Christian mystics' own works that I am now reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul, the compilation that was put together in Experience Your Perfect Soul. So I just wanted to make sure that I made that clear, and I hope you understand what I just said. So the heart doesn't speak of misery. It tells of perfection. The heart tells us all is well. The quiet place says, tranquility is the real, and that's in quote, not in quotes, I'm sorry, italicized. Tranquility is the real nature of our being. Not misery, but tranquility. And it also is referred to as the quiet place. So if I notice that my mind is in misery or is loud, or frantic, or busy, not tranquil, I can realize that I am out of real nature and into illusion. And I can stop and redirect by turning away from thought and towards awareness. You know, pay attention to the awareness and ask for help. So the heart doesn't speak of misery. It tells of perfection. The heart tells us all is well. The quiet place says, and this is in quotes, tranquility is the real nature of our being. And that's got an exclamation point. I mean, who does not desire quiet, tranquil, peaceful, you know, serenity? No chaos. So it is foolish beyond measure to stand buffeted and blown by the world's vicissitudes when an undisturbable, unshakable tranquility is as close as breathing. Yeah. It is foolish beyond measure to stand buffeted and blown by the world's vicissitudes, when an undisturbable, unshakable tranquility is as close as breathing. There is a means by which one comes to make a practical, concrete discovery of this tranquility for himself or herself. So there is a means by which we can come to make a practical, concrete discovery of this tranquility for ourself. She can lay hold on this truth, or he, I'm just using she because at least for me, I am still identified as she, and sometimes it just feels more impactful in the moment to say she, so that's why I'm doing that. Please forgive me. She can lay hold on this truth and take it unto herself without struggle and without traveling the long road of intellectuality. Yeah. My first, in my aspiration, the first, what I'm going to call instruction that came to me, the first of five, is let go of the burden of, quote, knowing something. Let go of the burden of knowing something. And that to me is signified by traveling the long road of intellectuality, especially when it comes to spirituality. And I know for certain, in my experience with A Course in Miracles, for instance, that for many, many years in the beginning, and that's been, you know, close to 30 years ago now, there was simply a struggle to intellectually understand what was being conveyed. The block was so thick, so cemented in mystery and uncertainty. It was a resonance, a total heartfelt resonance that was so, so palpable that I could not ignore that. And so I'm tenacious, and I took this long road of intellectuality with the help of many, many, many beautiful teachers that I feel extremely grateful for. And those teachers led me to where I am today, where I have a recognition, and like Reverend Carrie the Ray Christensen shared, where there is at least that glimmering, that light at the end of the tunnel, that opening that has shown me the truth of who I am, and it is this self sitting here in this chair speaking to my loving, wonderful brothers and sisters right here, right now. But it certainly seems, I would be less than honest to say that it hasn't at times felt like a struggle. But of course, if if the intellect is involved in this spirituality, it has been the ego directing, directing that, and I'll leave it at that. And now there is a at least a glimmer of understanding that I am not that. I am not that. So the following pages are all about this immediately available tranquility. Yep, that's what I'm talking about right there. There is no educational, theological, or metaphysical route to its doorstep. And I'm good with that. So question, question. When, where, and how do we start to discover reality? How do we begin our search for truth, wisdom, the absolute? Answer. This now awareness is the starting place. We begin with this here and now consciousness of existence called life. Awareness, consciousness. The consciousness reading this page is an undeniable and inescapable now fact. You know, I had a thought occur to me this week in contemplation. Just simply the thought, you know, can you get rid of your consciousness? I mean, is that something that you can really ever just like lay it aside? You know, like sometimes you can lay a thought aside where you notice a thought starting up and you're like, oh no, I am not entertaining that thought. And you simply let it go. And you notice that you let it go. And so, you know, if you apply that same inquiry to just being conscious, like for instance, you were conscious of that thought and you were able to dismiss that thought, there seemed to be, you know, some sort of action that went on within the mind. You recognize that, you know, came from the code or the matrix or, you know, whatever you want to call it. The garden variety of, you know, thoughts that are floating out there someplace, whatever we think that is. But you're able to consciously see that and let that go, you know, turn away from that thought and back towards just being conscious. So can you then do that with that consciousness? Can you get it to like buzz off or, you know, disappear or, you know, go away, fall asleep? Really, I mean, can you ever get it to do that? And that certainly isn't my experience. It is. It simply is. I can't get it to buzz off, you know, no matter what I do or no matter how I think about it. I exist. I am, and I'm not, you know, I am not that is beyond that. There's nothing beyond that. I am. So hang on, I got my pages kind of flipped forward as I was sharing. Okay, so again, the question was, you know, when, where, and how do we discover reality? How do we begin our search for truth, wisdom, the absolute? And the answer is, this now awareness is the starting place. We begin with this here and now consciousness of existence called life. Awareness, consciousness. The consciousness reading this page is an undeniable and inescapable now fact. We call it, quote, awareness. And awareness is present for the simple, self-evident reason that we are conscious. Even as we are conscious of these words. Let us define awareness and have our meaning carefully understood. This is not a mystical term. And there is nothing difficult to understand about it. as we refer to it here, awareness is, and the rest of this is in italics, awareness is the simple consciousness of being. And I believe in the most direct means to eternal bliss. Michael Langford describes thought and awareness. And I believe it says awareness is that which wakes up in the morning and is aware throughout the day until one goes to sleep at night. And if I can find the exact oh, let's see. I know I just read that this week, this past week, and let me see. I know he says thoughts are the words of your native language in your mind, and awareness, I believe, is that which wakes up in the morning and is awake and aware until one goes to sleep at night. I think that's how it goes. And that's what this is saying as well. Awareness is the simple consciousness of being. I mean, when we wake up in the morning, we are aware that we exist, and we're aware that we exist all through the day until we go to sleep at night. So we begin, and that's in quotes, we begin with this now awareness. But the beginning must be a new and genuine redetermination of isness. A redetermination, and that's in italics, a redetermination of isness. So instead of, waking up in the morning and thinking, I am this body that's crawling out of bed, maybe I can focus that consciousness right away on itself, that awareness right away on itself, rather than starting my day with maybe the list of what this body mind has to do, or what activity I'm going to do, or what I need to get done, or what I have planned, or right away the thinking starting up. We can simply be conscious of our beingness and start our day off focused there and asking, what next? What am I to do from that self next? From this now awareness, not the awareness that immediately gets caught up in thought. So that's why it's asking for a new and a genuine redetermination of isness. I'm not going to assume I know anything. I am simply going to get up and give over everything I think I know, decide I don't know by asking. Asking, show me awareness, what I am to see, what I am to do, where I am to go, who I am to speak to, I'm sorry, speak to, or not. Reverend Carey spoke to being that open channel. Simply allowing what is this new isness, this new and genuine isness that we're determined to know in experience, in experience, not just talk about it, not just have it be, you know, the idle words, but have that be our genuine experience. So we begin, and that's in quotes, because obviously we already are that. And William Samuel is obviously determined to help us understand that we are all that. We are that already. So we begin, that's why the begin is in quotes, we begin with this now awareness, but the beginning must be a new and genuine redetermination of isness. We start from scratch, but this is not being done until our previous beliefs, ideas, and cherished opinions are loosed and let go. Yeah. And Barb was spoke to, you know, the layers, how many layers, as she's, you know, the layers of anxiety, the layers of fear, the layers of, you know, wounded hearts, the layers of bundled up hearts, the layers of unhappiness, the layers and layers and layers of ego preservation strategies that we see as our beliefs, ideas, and cherished opinions, those ways that we feel constricted. So we start from scratch. We'll start where you are. But this is not being done until our previous beliefs, ideas, and cherished opinions are loosed and let go. The practice of humanity, the intellectual temptation, is to carry them with us, to see if our new discoveries coincide with our old ideas. You know, we'll kind of tiptoe our way along, you know, wanting to straddle the fence, not really wanting to really let go, but consider the possibility that, you know, there might be something to this redetermination of isness. There might be something to this new and genuine, endeavor. There might be something to it. So I'll consider it, but you know, I'm still going to hang on a little bit. It's how the ego wants it to be. So it will really use all those many preservation strategies along the way to keep us tied to the old way while we're, you know, maybe considering the new way too. So we're asked, you know, and my actual third part of my what I was to watch consistently in my aspiration was to watch the mind for all those thoughts that would serve this serve awareness cleanly, purely, and those thoughts that don't. You know, discernment, watching the mind for where the ego preservation strategies easily creep in, unnoticed, and sometimes noticed. So again, the practice of humanity, the intellectual temptation, is to carry them with us, you know, to carry those beliefs, carry those ideas, carry those cherished opinions, carry them with us to see if our new discoveries coincide with our old ideas. You know, try to bring the illusions into the truth. And what, muddy the truth? When the truth can't be muddied? It can't be muddy. So now it says, no, we let go everything. And that's in italics. We let go everything and start again, like new babes. with the first and basic fact about which there is no uncertainty, the isness of this present now awareness. All else must go without regard or regret, without fear or consternation. We stand in a void, naked, childlike, innocent, as this now awareness. Empty of the ego, we open our eyes and awaken. We open our eyes and awaken. We shuck the old ideas and let them go. We bring attention back to this real, present fact of awareness. Awareness is a fact. We know it. We are it. Nothing, nothing, and that's in italics. Nothing is outside of it. Here we discover the true identity. Awareness is a fact. And that's where that self-inquiry is really important. See if you can, you know, shuck off or tell awareness to buzz off. Go away. I refuse to be aware. However you want to, you know, however you want to challenge whether or not you are aware or not, and whether that really is all there is awareness. But because our attention has been so learned of outside focus, we have possibly become unaware of the truth of who we are, which is awareness. Existing as this unaware human who is actually aware, but just doesn't recognize it. Yeah, Karen says, the practice of humanity is ringing as I am believing I am human. Now let go that I am human without fear and ask, what am I? Yes. What am I? Okay, let me grab it. That was the end of that particular piece. But again, it's ending by asking us to shuck our old ideas, you know, shuck our old opinions, shuck our old thoughts, mental constructs, judgments. Shuck all of it. Let it go and step into. And that leads to my fourth aspiration, which is be the empty shell. Let go. Be the empty shell, that vessel that Reverend Carey spoke to this morning. That vessel through which divine self is able to move effortlessly as the truth of who I am. So let me grab a quick drink of water here. Okay, I just noticed the time. It's 11:11. 11:11. So this next piece is called What We Know, We Know. There are no words we can read that will convince us of the allness, and that's in italics, the allness. There are no words we can read that will convince us of the allness of this now consciousness. There is no one to whom we may listen or talk who can do more than persuade us intellectually. And the intellectually is also in italics. So, it's like somebody trying to talk us into turning towards the now consciousness, which is, all there really is, except that if our mind is lost in thought, we don't recognize that. We're either in the past or in the future, dreaming, thinking of something else than what's existing in this now consciousness, in this allness, in this present moment awareness. And there's nobody and nothing that's going to intellectually be able to persuade us or convince us to turn within to that unless we have that intense desire for liberation, as Michael Langford calls it. Or we. You know, are, we have an intense desire to know thyself in direct experience, not just, again, the idle words or the fluff of talking about it all the time and not taking responsibility, as A Course in Miracles says, for accepting the atonement for myself. So this says again, there are no words we can read that will convince us of the allness of this now consciousness. There is no one to whom we may listen or talk who can do more than persuade us intellectually. We know, and we know. Only when we find it and feel it within the heart. Reader, this will happen for you much sooner than you expect. And I say, whoop, whoop. Right now, bring yourself from an over-concern with things within awareness to awareness itself. And that so rings of like almost, and I say this in my own mind, the complexity of awareness, which is not really complex, but if my intellectual spirituality is involved at all in trying to understand what awareness is from the ego, that's really what's going on. There's that over concern going on. So I'm being told here right now, not some future time, but right now, bring yourself from an over concern with things within awareness to awareness itself. And the itself is in italics. So that's like the instruction in our meditation practices in the direct path that Karen has so lovingly put out. One of the instructions is notice your thoughts, notice your thoughts. Turn away from your thoughts and notice your awareness. Awareness, aware of awareness. Not awareness of thought, awareness of awareness. So we're turning away from the overly concerned awareness that wants to look out, that wants to see thought, that has been trained to look externally, and all the while it has allowed everything, because it is everything. And now we're being asked to look at it, turn away from all the distraction, all the detour, all the preservation strategies, all of what we intellectually understand, and turn towards awareness itself. So right now, bring yourself from an over-concern with things within awareness to awareness itself. With whatever I find myself reading, just as you now find yourself reading this, I have found it wise to be very, very wary, W-A-R-Y, wary, with an exclamation point. Why? And this next sentence, guys, is all in italics, the whole sentence. Here we go, listen up. Because our old, arrogant, egotistical nature seeks out sustaining agreement with itself and its distorted opinions. Those are pointed words, no fluff. So again, I'm going to read them one more time. So why is it wise to be really, really, very, very wary? Because our old, arrogant, egotistical nature seeks out sustaining agreement with itself and its distorted opinions. You know, it has been the sentinel to the heart that Karen spoke to this morning in meditation, that sentinel that stands guard at the door to the heart, the doorway, the opening, beyond which is the truth. And it has said, I am your safety, and we have believed that belief. And it has been given most of our attention. And so there's a song by the Eagles, and one of the lines came to me, and it's, I will not go quietly. I will not go quietly. That could be, you know, the ego's motto. I will not go quietly. The habitual, unregenerate intellect of us all, unregenerate, that's a good one. You know, it's not generating anything new at all. It's just regurgitating the past and acting like that's a present moment reality. Or it's worried and concerned about a future that doesn't even exist. Again, another dreamlike state. Making it up, hallucinating. You know, really making truly unregenerate. It's not serving us, but it's habitual, mind you, this intellect. The habitual, unregenerate intellect of us all, is seldom interested in aught but shoring up its forged and fraudulent foundations. And that word forged, you know, iron. there's a piece in A Course in Miracles, maybe even in the original edition, that speaks of the mind, like the picture is of the mind with bands of steel with iron overlaid. And that makes me think of, you know, an old craftsman with that heavy anvil, and that, you know, tool that they have to slam, that hammer that slams over and over, forging iron to shape into a certain, you know, I can just see it in my mind. And those are the beliefs, the opinions, the habitual tendencies and unregenerate intellect, the old arrogant egotistical nature that is looking frantically for everything it can that will agree with itself so that it can shore up its weak, weak foundation as we start to inquire within and ask, what am I really? What am I? Is this belief fraudulent? Or is it true? If I am experiencing misery, is this belief from the heart? Or is this belief an old, egotistical, habitual, unregenerate thought that I am entertaining by placing my precious awareness onto it instead of redirecting it back to the truth of who I am? And asking to rest there, asking for instruction. What now? Guide me from your restfulness. Yeah. So again, the habitual, unregenerate intellect of us all is seldom interested in aught but shoring up its forged and fraudulent foundations. When it finds a line or a paragraph that agrees with its view of reality, it says, aha, and underlines the words. When it finds an idea repugnant to its already established concept, so, you know, when we see an idea that, you know, we object to. So when we find an idea, when it finds, so this is the ego, when it finds an idea repugnant to its already established concept, you know, already established, I know, I already know what this means. Usually something that tends to demean, diminish, or finish the high and mighty ego, it grunts and writes, bosh, like absurd, that's crazy, that's nonsense, in the margin. How often are we amused by these notations at a later reading? And I know for myself, again, with my years of intellectually trying to understand A Course in Miracles, I have I can't even tell you how many Course in Miracles books I have, but I have a lot. And even some people out there that might be listening have some of the books that were mine. Karen Worth knows some of those people. They have my books with my notes. Yeah, Karen gave one of mine away. And so she has my notes now. To Joanna, yes, Joanna's using one of my books now. But I would in my earlier books, I definitely had question marks as I would read and have no understanding at all of what that, what something meant. So I would put a question mark by it. And I'm a pretty persistent kind of gal, and so even sitting in inquiry, even sitting in contemplation, the answer just there was no clarity there for me. But I finally I would move on. I would simply move on and move on. And so, 30 years into the book, I definitely don't have those question marks anymore. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful. It's not so much about at all the intellectual understanding, and I'm grateful for that too. It feels maybe just like a some sort of a, at least for me on a personal level, some sort of a leap past that place. Past that place. That's all I'm going to say. It just doesn't feel important anymore to make that the goal. Yes. At any rate. So when a book is successfully communicating, one may not be as impressed with the same words at the end as at the beginning. Insights are nearly always expanded upon rereading, and that's in italics, rereading. And oh my gosh, that's so true for me. I mean, I cannot tell you, I just cannot tell you how important that has been for me to reread, 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 yes. And not just for the words themselves. There's a resonance that comes. There's, like I said, when I first started to read A Course in Miracles, as much as my understanding was minimal at best, 30 years ago, I knew viscerally this was for me at that time. And so I trusted that the ignorance, that the darkness would dissipate. And for certain, it has to a great, great degree. Yes, trust. We talked about trust this morning. Oh my gosh, I see that I have 1 minute left. So I'll finish just this page. Page 11. So it says, when a book is successfully communicating, one may not be as impressed with the same words at the end as at the beginning. Insights are nearly always expanded upon rereading, and very often the boshes of the first reading begin to make sense with the second. So true. And that seems like a perfect ending. So we will be starting on page 12 next week, and I look forward to sharing with you. I will earmark my book. Thanks everybody for joining with me, and I will be listening to Miss Rebecca next. So, thanks for joining, guys. God bless everybody. See you later.